Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is the show where we discuss everything having to do with us either separating into a community that we can control, or making plans and organizing to control the community that we now live in. We have a special returning guest for tonight's show. It's a brother who has a lot of experience in real estate investments, in organizing group purchases, and as we endeavor as Muslims to separate and to form communities of our own, we need experienced people that have experience to advise us on how we can come together and organize, and to do this without putting ourselves in jeopardy. If we don't understand the system in which we operate in, we can make mistakes that can end up costing us a lot of money or a lot of heartache. And so if we don't know how to create and write business agreements, if we don't know how to secure property so it can't be swindled or tricked from us, if we don't know how to pool our money together so that there's transparency, and so that everybody understands what their investment is doing, if we don't do these things, then all kinds of problems can come up. And it can discourage some of our weak-hearted brothers and sisters who look forward to coming together and forming our own communities. But we still, even as Muslims, we still have an innate engram of trusting ourselves where money is concerned. So it is imperative for those who say that we are at the forefront, or we are the pioneers, or we are the ones who are advising and helping people, it is imperative that we put things together properly, transparently, and in a way, and handle our people in a way so they can have faith in us and trust us. We have the best example in the world, and you all know who that is, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. If we just follow his example, follow his example and seek guidance, first with qualified Muslims, much like the brother that we have on tonight. We seek guidance from qualified Muslims and educate ourselves. And if we educate ourselves to the degree that we know how to choose help, then that reduces the possibility of us having problems as we endeavor to separate and to form communities. So, Brother Leroy, I don't see your number there, brother. If you are on the line, Brother Leroy, I'm sorry. If you are on the line, sir, go ahead and press that 1 so that I can see you. Otherwise, I'm going to wait till I see a 1 pop up, and I'll open that line. So, brothers and sisters, now is the time that we continue to educate ourselves and plan on building communities. It requires knowledge about property. It requires knowledge about investing. And it requires courage, because if you are in a position where you have worked, you know, all of us, not all of us, but the older brothers and sisters, a lot of us have worked really, really hard for what we have. And we've all heard about people who lost their retirement, their savings, in investing in areas that we thought were good areas, but they weren't. And so that's why it's really important to listen to Muslims that have that skill. And so we, at the time, the LEAVE movement, we're working to vet and find brothers and sisters who not only want to join us in building the Muhammad Farms community, but also want to be part of a team to help other Muslims either move to a community that they can control, or to start to control their own community. So what does it take to control your own community? What does that mean? What's required? Does that mean establishing a perimeter and having brothers standing post, you know, being in force? Or does that mean actually owning the real estate? Does that mean controlling the politics? Does that mean controlling the economics? Well, my understanding is it's some of all of that. It's some of all of that. And all of that's not going to happen at the same time. You know, we'll probably end up doing is whatever resource we have, we'll start putting that in place. All of that is necessary. Agriculture, we need to have an alternative food source. It may not be growing your food at first, but we should be working on that. You don't control your community if someone could close your borders and stop food from coming in and you starve. So that's not controlling your community. You're not controlling community if someone decides to turn the water off and you don't have any water. That's not controlling our community. These are things that we have to think about. We have to think about these things. And that's what the ministries are for. Every aspect of community control is absolutely placed or defined in the 9 ministries of the Nation of Islam. So if you're talking about controlling your community and you're not in a ministry, then I strongly suggest that you check your activity, because I see no other way to control communities without getting all the ministries in place. That being said, Brother Leroy, are you out there? Brother Leroy, if you're out there, go ahead and press that 1 so we can recognize you. I don't see your number here, but you might be on a different phone. So go ahead and press that 1, Brother Leroy, if you're there. Otherwise, anyone else that's in the call, if you have a comment or question about community building, specifically our brother, Brother Leroy. I don't know why I'm having trouble with that. I guess I'm getting mixed up with Brother Leon. Our brother, Brother Leroy, he has a company called Property Rehab Central. It's a real estate management and investment services company in Southfield, Michigan. He is also co-founder of the Fringe City Development Group. Brother Leroy is very passionate about community building. He's a strategic planner and has worked with various agencies and groups to create development plans in Detroit and assisted with the creation of Cluster 9 master plans submitted to the City of Detroit, as well as North End Quality Life Plan. So this is a brother who's passionate about us controlling our communities. So I see our brother, Dr. Ridgely, is on. He probably said, I'm going to have to help Brother Cross now because he sounds like he's struggling. So, but Dr. Ridgely, I'm opening your mic. As-salamu alaykum, sir.
Well, alaykum salam. And, you know, while me and Sister Ann are talking, you might want to call the brother directly and see what's going on. But,
yes, sir.
You know, we...
Oh, I think he's here. Hello. He's here. I see him right now.
Okay. All right. Praise be to Allah.
As-salamu alaykum, Brother Leo. Leroy.
Well, alaykum salam, sir. How's everyone?
How are you? Oh, praise be to Allah.
Good.
How are you doing?
Oh, praise be to Allah. I'm well.
We are glad to have you back, brother. We enjoyed your last call so much last time, you know, and we had such a great response. And so we're excited to have you back again. And, you know, myself and my wife, due to circumstances beyond the control, we weren't able to make the workshops. We weren't able to make Savior's Day. And there was key workshops that we really wanted to attend. And we saw the report on Sister Ava's workshop. I don't think I saw a report on the Detroit Mecca Project. So were you able to make those workshops?
Well, I was able to make the separation workshop that Minister Ava was part of. But I wasn't able to make the workshops were at the same time. So, you know, it was
a
choice of... Yeah, I don't know why that was done like that. So, you know, but I wanted to, I've been pretty much privy to it.
Brother Leroy? Can you all hear me? It's Brother Carlton. Can you hear me, Dr. Ridgely?
Yes, sir.
I'm here. I'm not sure. I was disconnected. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. We hear you. Yes, sir.
But in essence, I was able to sit through the separation workshop, and it was very exciting. A lot of good information came out of it, and, you know, I left fully energized.
Praise be to Allah. So what is your perspective on how the organizations around separation is going from a city planner point of view, or from someone with your experience? How do you see your skill set fitting in our plans?
Well, it seems like the conversation in the nation is coming about, you know, on several different fronts. So it seems like there's the push for the idea of separation to be put forward in a formal way, in terms of a national campaign to get Black people to come together to pretty much petition the government for separation, and that's one approach. And then from the approach of a real estate development, you know, that's another approach that I would say I fit more in line with that, and I fit in with both. But I think, you know, there is a power that we have implement some of what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us in terms of building our communities right now, that we have the power to do right now. So So I think that, you know, all of it is good, and all of it, I believe, is all on, you know, it may be different interstates that are all on one major highway in terms of what we will eventually accomplish. So I would say that, you know, from a city's planner standpoint, what my focus is creating projects. And mm-hmm. so that's the area that I'm still focused on, and I'm still, you know, kind of working in that area.
So can you give an example of some projects that you're working on, brother, and how they work it out?
Well, we have in Detroit, we have property here, and we have a target area here. We call it the Jericho Heights area, and it's the area around the existing Moss Number One. So we have a mix of residential properties, and we have commercial spaces. And so,
who's the we were talking about? What type of organization? What type of structure is it?
The structure started off as a private investment club, but right now we filed documents with the IRS to become a CDC, which is a community development corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And being a CDC allows you, you know, to kind of you're a quasi social agency, I would say, and you're in position to take advantage of a lot of grants and government help for people that are trying to redevelop communities. So we're going to use that platform as well as still operate from a private developer position. So we're doing both. But right now, a lot of what we're aiming at in this neighborhood is going to be through the CDC format.
Does that CDC format also give banks opportunities to be a part of it? My understanding is that once you sell the CDC, then you have a mm-hmm. special not a back door as such, but at least an open door to the banks, because they got to put a certain amount of money in such development corporations.
That's true. Yeah, most of the time there are community development banks that partner with CDCs, and when you're, you know, in Detroit, they only allow CDCs to develop. Like each CDC has a target area, and so whatever community banks are in your target area, typically those relationships are already kind of fostered through city government for those banks to work with the CDCs to help redevelop those communities. So what the CDC does is they create, you know, they create neighborhood development plans, and those neighborhood development plans are reviewed. And if they're accepted, then what you have is a lot of assistance that comes around your CDC to help fund your plan for the neighborhood.
Now, when you say a development plan, that mm-hmm. include industry and businesses or just houses?
No, it definitely includes industry, businesses. It includes education. It includes all facets of what it takes to have a self-sustainable community. So that would include pretty much everything. Yeah, it's pretty wide open.
Wow.
So can you give me some examples of the types of businesses that you all are trying to establish in this CDC area?
Well, right now we're looking at a couple of. So there's a retail strip on Wyoming Avenue in Detroit. And there are a few brothers and sisters that already own properties. You know, once the minister called for us to come to Detroit to rebuild our communities, believers started buying properties right around the mosque. So right now there's a brother that has a clothing business right across the parking lot from the mosque.
This the old mosque and a new mosque?
Yes, sir. There's an old mosque, there's an existing mosque, and then there's a new mosque. So the existing mosque number one, we're still meeting in the existing mosque at 14880 Wyoming in Detroit. Then there's a new location that the mosque is going to move to. This building has been purchased, and it's under renovation right now. And when it's complete, we're going to move into this new facility. And it's about 3 miles.
How's that going to work if now if you're developing a community around the old mosque, but then you move everybody to the new mosque? How's that going to work?
Well, I'm not going to say I'm the best person to answer that question. I will say this. We're looking at the entire city of Detroit as ours. So this new place, from what I understand, is we're going to develop right along a corridor. There's going to be a corridor development, and it's going to start where we are, and we're going to redevelop all the way to this new position. So that's the language that's being.
How many miles is that?
It's approximately 3 miles away, the new position is.
Okay. Well, they're planning to keep the old mosque, and in particular, to keep the school there?
You know, Dr. Risley, I'm not going to say that I can say for sure.
Okay, that's cool.
My wife does teach at MUI, but I think what they're going to probably do is work in the existing mosque until the new one. There is room in the new mosque for a school. So they are going to move MUI into the new building, but I believe that it's going to be, you know, everything is going to be in the transitional model. So it's going to transition. I don't think it's going to be up and jump, more of a transition.
What I'm getting at is that, okay, you got a 3 mile stretch from the old mosque to the new mosque, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you do, you still can keep the old mosque, but it'd be designated for something else. If it's not the MUI, then something else, so that the whole that the people do not have to feel that they're going to be forlorn, but there's going to be a continuous development around both those entities that you already have, and then the connecting corridor of 3 miles that you're looking to do further purchases and investment. So that then it becomes a larger community. All I'm saying is that think like white folks think and Jews think. In other words, we have to do long-term planning and not just short-term profit maximization or short-term, bam, bam, and thank you, ma'am, and that's it, and you're gone. You got to think in long-term. So people can make long-term investment. See, one thing about white folks, they make sure that they got control of where people are going, so that when they invest in property and get out a 30-year mortgage on it or build a building, it's going to take 15 or 20 years to, in fact, recoup the cost of the building. They have to make sure that things are in place so that that happens. So not only do they get involved with the production aspect of the building and the advertising for the business, they stay involved with city and county government to make sure that they do not do any zoning or construction that's going to interfere with their plan. We like to deal with a problem and go in and protest problems instead of us understanding how economic development works and be ahead of the game and look at how things are going to affect us in the future and be planning so that everybody's investment will be safe because we are planning for all the best contingencies and we got people in place to make sure that the system don't do nothing that's going to mess up with our plan. You see, this is where the military structure comes in, and that is at the last resort. You know you can bring bodies to the situation to make the whoever thinks they're in charge understand that you're not out here standing by yourself. That this investment belongs to the group, and the group is going to defend that investment, and not going to allow you to do that what you're trying to do right now. So this is important because in Chicago, the restaurant, our restaurant in Chicago, I watched the city of Chicago mess up in front of our restaurant for a 2 or 3 year period. Okay? That affected our business. We should have been in position to challenge the city of Chicago for not fixing that road. And we should have people in place in city government, but also the community to go in our behalf to the government and demand that they fix that road. Those are the types
Absolutely.
Of things in terms of controlling the community that you're living in is that we have to be involved with. You don't have to be the city councilman. You don't have to be, but you have to realize what the city councilman and the mayor want. They won't vote for next time. If it's shown that they are incompetent and they cannot provide the needs of the community, then they're going to have to get it together or they won't be elected the next time. So you can use the threat of non-election to make them do what you want without you actually sitting in the seat. All I'm saying is when we talk about community, control the community that we live in, and we talk about trying to get people to invest in the community and come to the community, we have to think in terms of how to make that a good move for the people that we want to move. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, sir. Well, I think everything you said is absolutely correct. We have the power, and I think there was a time when the minister came to the city of Detroit during the administration of Kwame Kilpatrick, and the city of Detroit gave the ministers the keys to the city. And, of course, there's a lot of power in Detroit, you know, from different communities. You know, we have Chaldeans, Greeks, the Jews. We have all type of different ethnicities and that don't agree with the Nation of Islam and don't agree with the minister, but because of the amount of support that the minister has in Detroit from black people, we had leveraged that into tremendous influence in city government. And the things that I know that that student minister Abdul Sharif is dealing with the restaurant right now in Atlanta, where he's dealing with some road issues and, you know, with the restaurant there, and the same thing that in Chicago, we probably wouldn't have had that problem in Detroit because we have that type of leverage to use in city government. And so none of the communities in Detroit, we have several communities, especially now one of the biggest examples is the Arab community in Dearborn, Michigan. You go to that city and, you know, as much as white people say that they don't like the people from the Middle East, if you go to Dearborn, Michigan right now, there's a majority population of Arab people, and the Arabs drive up and down the street and the police don't bother them. We don't hear any stories of police brutality where the police are beating up the Arabs. They build businesses. They have all type of retail and housing, and they do all of the things that are culturally similar for them. And no one bothers them. They don't stop them. They have live chickens running in the backyard, even though city ordinance say that they can't. But because there's so many Arabs and they're united, they do what they want. And, of course, we have – Detroit is still a majority black city. So we should have that kind of power and influence. And the Nation of Islam is still at the vanguard of the black community. We have to figure out how to translate – what we have into what you're talking about, Dr. Ridgely. And I think, you know, that's one of the challenges that we face. Detroit sent 70,000 black men to the Million Man March. We have more people at the Million Man March from the city of Detroit than black men showed up to the Million Man March from D.C., according to what we were told. We have a lot of potential. And I think that same thing is true for a lot of the black populated cities in America. But
back to the issue of Dearborn. Okay, explain to me how can they have those chickens in the backyard if it's an ordinance in Detroit against that? Explain to how they're able to do that.
I think it's because, you know, that's just one example.
the Arabs, no one bothers them. And it's because they don't respond to their problems as individuals. They respond as a community. So if you don't want to upset that hive of bees, you leave them alone. And no one in their community is complaining about it. So, you know, how is the ordinance enforcers even going to know that that's an issue if they don't get any complaints
right.
at City Hall?
Right.
So
I think that's heavy right there. See, that's heavy right there, mm-hmm. what you just said. In other words, there's an ordinance about those loose chickens in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
But if nobody complains about it, there's no excuse for them to come in to try to slap the law on the person who has a chicken because the community did not complain about it.
Right.
So even though it's on the books, they act like they don't see it because if the people there don't care, if they don't mind, then they don't want to get involved in the issue of trying to force their community to do something they want to do, don't want, even though it's on the books, but it ain't that big a deal because it's not going to affect nobody else in another community. In other words, those chickens are just running around in their community. It's not running
right.
around in another community. Now, if it was running around in another community and that community didn't want it, then they can use the ordinance to shut that chicken down.
Right.
But even though it's on the books, but because the people in that area of Dearborn don't mind the chickens running around, then the outside city that's over Dearborn, Detroit over Dearborn, ain't going to mess with them because there going to be repercussions economically and politically. So that's
yes,
I think people need to understand that. They think that the law is the law. Yeah, the law is the law, but if nobody brings in the law, and this is why it's so important that we set up what, the 10,000 fearless, we set up those conflict resolution, so that within our community we don't bring in the outside forces. We take care of the situation in the community, and we don't have to worry about police brutality because they're not called in. Many of the problems
right.
that we have is us calling in the police, and the police come in there killing somebody that you didn't mean for the police to kill, but you called them.
That's right. That's 100% right. That's the way the nation, you know, I was born in a nation, and prior to 1975, and I'm sure everybody's heard these stories before, it wasn't, you know, unique to where we were, but that we had, at that time, we had control over a direct connecting 9 city blocks. So it was from Glen Street to Calvert to Lawrence to Collingwood to Burlingame to Webb, to Tuxedo, to Elmhurst. The Nation of Islam had all of those blocks. Mosque number 1 was on there. And we didn't know anything about the police. I didn't know nothing about seeing the police do anything. The FOI controlled the neighborhood. The cars wouldn't make U-turns in front of the mosque. The brothers walking down the street, if they had a cigarette, there was no such city ordinance at the time that said there was no allowance of public smoking, but they knew that they were not going to smoke when they hit the one street until they got past where we were. They put the cigarette out. So we do have the kind of power and ability on both ways to do what we wanted and stop what we don't want. So we have to get back to that.
Well, you know, that history, you know, I did not know about that in Detroit. Now, I was in the first, but I was in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So
yes,
when
sir.
You say this was like this, you know, see, everybody don't know that. This is the
yes,
type
sir.
Of stuff that needs to be documented and propagated so people understand. We're not talking about a pipe dream. We're talking about
that's
something
right.
that we had before and we can have again. So that's
yeah,
very
right.
important. I didn't know that there was 9 blocks, square blocks in Detroit that was basically controlled by the Nation of Islam. I didn't know that. That's important.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well,
so
to go
let
back.
Me take this time. for station break and station identification. Brothers and sisters, if you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am, please press 1. Please press 1 to give a comment or ask a question to either our brother, Brother Leroy, or our brother, Dr. Ridgely, while you can. So go ahead, brothers.
No, I was just saying that this may be something we need to call out for Brother Leroy and Brother Charlton, is that we need to know those stories about the example that we had underneath the arm of Elijah Muhammad in terms of people, Muslims, controlling their community. I'm sure we had those. I know we had those stories in New York and Brooklyn and other parts of the country. The young people who don't know anything about that need to know that so they can see that this is not a pipe dream you're talking about. It's something that actually is in place. And the only reason it went down is that we took it down thinking that we didn't need that no more. After all of Elijah Muhammad left, the police didn't take it down. The city government didn't take it down. We left it. We left it. So we need to
understand.
Go ahead.
And to add to that, Dr. Ridgely, the reality is that same street is now called Elijah Muhammad Boulevard. The city ended up, they respect what we did. One of the things
But do we control it now, though?
No, sir, we don't. No, sir, we
now
don't.
How did that people leave? How did that happen that we lost control?
Well, we lost control in 1975 when the Nation of Islam transitioned into the leadership of Imam Mujahideen Muhammad. And we you know, for those that don't know, that's when the Nation of Islam went from being under the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to a more orthodox approach. That's an entire story because I lived through that history. I lived through it as a child, and it was terrible. The dismantling of our control over the neighborhood was similar to what I see happening in places like Iraq and different countries that are devastated because it was a very difficult world to live in after the fact. We had a grocery store, a full Nation of Islam grocery store on Linwood, which was the avenue at the time. I grew up with, you know, walking to the store meant we walked to our Muslim grocery store. And on the aisles, the canned goods were Muslim-produced canned goods. That was how that's how I knew reality. I didn't know outside of that. When the Nation fell, I saw people that I couldn't even imagine doing things that they didn't do. So that's a serious topic.
How did the store? How did the store begin to deteriorate? I mean, come on. I know that he said it's a fix. It's a long story, but you see, this needs to be talked about because see, we got people who are saying that we can't do this, but we need to know that we did do this. Then we need to know what happened to this. Show that is all in our hands. So
yes,
tell
sir.
Us the story. What happened to that grocery store? Why did it go down?
Well,
why did people stop purchasing there? What happened?
Well, what the Nation, so when Imam Mujahideen took over, the Nation went away from a focus of being independent and separate to melting into the general American society. So Imam Mujahideen stripped the sisters of and the brothers of every part of our national identity. So that's what we lived through. One of the first things that we lost was, you know, a Muslim in the Nation of Islam said assalamu alaikum, and the response was wa alaikum salam. It turned into wa alaikum assalam, which was a different way that we spoke. And then we started inviting different people that we didn't know about. We started seeing different communities and people at the masjid instead of it being a mosque. The store itself was controlled by a couple of brothers, and eventually, after they lost the Nation of Islam's way of thinking, they started selling other products in the stores. So eventually, what was known as OMC, Muslim store, became a beer and wine. You could buy
wow.
beer and wine in this same place. And
wow.
it turned into where you can buy cigarettes. And so
wow.
it lost its identity as a Muslim grocery store, and it became that. The believers, this Muslim-controlled community was near where the riots, the 1967 riots happened in Detroit, and it was right across the street from Central High School. So there's a historic neighborhood called Boston Edison. The riots caused the white people, in particular the Jews, to leave that neighborhood. The riots pushed them out, and so a lot of the believers went in and started buying houses in the neighborhoods right around where the mosque was. So we lived in a small mansion in the historic district, and the secretary of the mosque, he lived a few houses down, and Minister John Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's brother, lived a few doors down. Well, what ended up happening is, because we were all very tight-knit as Muslims in the nation, as the nation was transitioning away from being morally based into this new reality, the young Muslims picked up some really bad habits.
Mm.
And we took our organization and we went in a real negative way with it.
So in other words, they became gangsters, right?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what happened.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was. That's what I mean when I say it was a very dark period of time.
Well, you know, but you know what? You know, the minister talked to us about that. You need to do an autopsy. You know how to do an autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to do an autopsy of what happened, so that we can understand how not to allow it to happen again, and understand the importance of what we had when we were alive. You know, you mentioned how this type of discipline others who even came through the community. But then when we lost our discipline, we lost everything.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
That's the power. That's why I say, when you want to make an investment in a situation, how the white man and the Jews, how they control the parameters for the next 30 years to make sure they get their money back. See, they discipline other people according to how they want them to be in place. So we have to discipline ourselves to be in place to support that and hold that discipline throughout the investment in whatever it is we set up. So this history of how the nation became the nation and grew and got power in places like Detroit, and then how we allow it to changing of our attitude and our belief system, how that belief system taken down actually became an economic destruction of a community. How
right.
religion and culture and discipline produce economy. And how when we lost that, we lost economy.
That's right.
I need a book, Brother Leroy. I need a book.
That would be a very interesting book,
like,
because
it.
There's a lot of...
It sure would.
It's
a
not
story
a book. It's not a book. A set of presentations. Because you know how black holes
yes,
don't
sir.
Work, right? But some PowerPoint
right.
with some pictures and a presentation, the development and the destruction of the Muslim neighborhood or the Muslim community in Detroit
yes,
can be an example for us going forward. Brother, I think that would be a great I know that it's painful, and we don't like to go back over those painful things, but now Mr. Farrakhan wants us to separate, and we've got people who are naysaying to say there's a pipe dream. We need to let them know it's not a pipe dream. And our failure was not because of the outside world pushing in, but we gave it up. So all
that's
we
right.
have to do this time is not give it up once we set it up, and it will be all right.
That's right, brother. No, you're 100% right. I think that is a very, very profound way to look at it, because it's a story that has never been told, and it's history that has never been examined as far as I know. We haven't looked at it critically from our own eyes, because Yeah, people don't know that it was intentionally undermined. It was imploded on purpose. And, you know, I think one of the things that people grew up in the nation, there's a lot of resentment because we were children and we believed in it, even if our parents didn't. We believed in it 100%. We didn't know anything else. And it's completely possible to rebuild it, as you're saying. And I wanted that for my children. And I want it for my grandchildren now. And so that's actually at the forefront of the idea that we're trying to build now, is to recreate it. But this time, more along the lines of sustainability. How can we build it? And it's not personality driven.
Right.
Because one thing about the Arabs is it's a lot of different Muslims in Dearborn. You know, they're just like all of the sects of Islam we have, they're all present in these places. And it's not just Dearborn. It's also Hamtramck. But you have the Bengali Muslims from India. They're there. You have Muslims from Pakistan in this other place, Hamtramck, which is where Master Farad Muhammad started off in Detroit. You have Muslims from Yemen in Hamtramck. Then you have other communities, but they all get along because there's a cultural agreement. There's a cultural continuity, and it's the culture, not the religion, the culture that sustains those places. And so if we can do the same thing, because it's really difficult, whenever we try to do things, we try to get everybody to agree first, then we try to enact a movement. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a big advantage because he didn't have a lot of competition in Islam in the black community at that time. Now right. We have all kinds of ideas. And it's been difficult for us because we all try to come together in a convention and say, okay, because this is going to be the way we're going to do it, and we can't agree, and we can't even have that type of agreement in the house. We don't even have that type of unity in our own house. But if we could figure out a way to kind of get going and understand that it's the culture that we're going to unite around, then we can have a way to have the sustainability piece, because that's the part that's the most important. If it's personality driven, as soon as the personality goes away, the whole movement is going to die off. And so,
you know, brother,
I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll just make this last point. There's a third example in Detroit, and that's the example of the intentional development of the downtown, the greater downtown, where Detroit is now going through what everybody's seeing all over the country, which is the intentional gentrification of formerly black-controlled communities. Well, you know, they filled those community up. The displacement used to be white for black. You know, white people would move in and black people would move out. They've gotten way better at doing that nowadays. There's no longer the color displacement. Now it's the cultural displacement. And it's very difficult to argue against cultural displacement. So hipsters come in now, young professionals come in now, and those young professionals and hipsters can be any color, black, Chinese, they can be anything. Once they move you out culturally, then they infuse more and more cultural presence into those places. Now, this is the intentional stuff that's happening downtown. They put that culture in, and then they weave it in so that, and then they give it the placemaking aspect where they create all of these hip spots. And people, you know, they go to the bar there. They go, and then, you know, and whatever they do, they build a life. They call it live, work, play. They build a life right in those places, and that sustainable culture is what keeps that place going. I think the Nation of Islam, we have the best culture. That's why we love Savior's Day so much, because we have an opportunity. We can build Savior's Day in a city, and we could just be Savior's Day all year round. And I think if we did that, we wouldn't have to worry so much about the personality aspect of this. But that's what I wanted to say on that point.
Well, brother, you said a mouthful right there, because, see, you understand exactly how they're doing it. You call it a hipster. So what is the hipster
community? The hipster is the young urban professional that we see in every Starbucks. You know, they're the skateboarding, mm-hmm. backpacking, educated, techno savvy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say white, but they're not always white. They're black. They're every color, and we see them there in every city. I can throw a dart blindfolded and hit anywhere on the map. Just point me into the direction of where Starbucks is, and I'm gonna find those hipsters.
Yeah, that's what's happening in Oakland, California. I know exactly what you're talking about, brother.
Yes, sir. Phoenix, Houston, every city that I've been in recently, I can find that community. They're everywhere, and it's the same group of people. And what happens is industry builds up around them. You know, there's a polarity shift, because now industry chases the hipsters down because those tend to be the talented, energetic population. So when companies decide where they're going to relocate, they look for where the greatest concentration of that particular population is, so that they can
wow.
bring their business there, because those are the people they want to hire.
Wow.
That can work. That can also work for us, you know, because wherever we are, we recreate humans, and we could bring businesses around to wherever we want business to go, because we have a clean, morally sound population and potential workforce to offer them. But that's what the hipsters have going for them. That's why they always thrive, because businesses go wherever they are.
Wow. Brother, are you in a group that can help us develop all these ideas, brother? Because you really own something here. I think you can see some things that we just passed by, and I hope there's a group that's working on these things to develop the plans by which we can take our culture that was brought to us by Master Farhan Muhammad, right? And from that
yes,
culture,
sir.
Develop the economy.
I'm with you, Dr. Risley. I'm with you. It's not a lot. I will say that I've, you know, brother Dr. Abdul Halim in Houston was here in Detroit, and we did the presentation, and he's a PhD, I think, in this subject, and he's in line with it. But I can't say there's any particular group that's leading the way. There's a few people here and there, and we have to figure out how to create this group.
Well, I think that if you can help us start off with this history of the Muslim community that was in the first, that was in Detroit, how it had power and how it worked, and then how the dissolution of our culture that wound up in the dissolution of our economy, and then how the reverse could be done. I mean, I think that would get, because we got all these young people who they need something to study, and while they're in college, there's a lot of things they can be studying, but they got to have some type of focus. And right now, all they're hearing from the older Negro crowd is separation is a pipe dream. Like, what's his name? What's that light skinned boy with the crazy hair? Dr.
Cornell West.
Dr. Cornell West. See,
mm-hmm.
It's people like that who's promulgating this idea that separation is a pipe dream. Right? We have to show them the opposite, but we got to show them. And, like, you know, writing a book would take too much time, but a couple of videos that we can put on YouTube and Facebook, I think that it would be very helpful.
Yes, sir. Well, that would be a great project. And, you know, there are other believers that would, I'm sure there's not a shortage of believers that live through it. And we could probably get together and tell our stories. Our captain in the mosque in Detroit is one of the people that lived that history. And I'm sure, you know, other people here, and I'm sure they're all over the country, that would love to get together to tell that story.
Okay,
so
can I begin
grouping these people together.
Oh, praise be to Allah.
ain't nothing like a good idea but a human being.
Yes, sir.
And
yes, sir.
Take this on, brother. I think it'll be a great service to us and to you and your investors. Because, again, people like to feel that, that the investment is going to be in place. But we don't even know how things are done to keep things viable. You know what I mean? And this type
yes,
of history and understanding, like what you talk about with the hipsters, you know, most people, they ain't picked none of that up. They ain't picked that up. They live and write it, but they're not picking that up. You understand? So it takes time
yes, sir.
To go out amongst the people and observe it and then bring it back for planning. That's what we do every 25,000 years. Because then we're not going to do it anymore because Masrullah Muhammad has knocked all that out. But in the past, that's how we did it. But the scientists, they went out amongst the people before they went into a room to write the history. They went out amongst the people to get the reality of where what was going on, where the people's head was at. And then they were planning for the future. So those types of things, people like you can really help us to do. So you in charge of that? Oh, praise the people of Allah. As soon as you,
yes, sir.
As soon as you get the first video, let me know. We'll try to promote that, okay?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm on it. I'm on it.
There you go. There you go. You don't have enough to do. You don't have enough to do, Brother Leo. No, Brother Leo. So we doctors gave you something
no,
else
wait,
to
we
do.
Well,
we're
know,
down
we
to our
ask,
last
this,
3 minutes.
This, you don't ask people
yes,
who ain't doing nothing to do nothing. You always get busy people to do more. Okay? Because the ones who ain't doing nothing, they ain't going to do nothing. But unfortunately, the ones that are doing something now, my brother, you have to develop a team. So they can
yes, sir.
You can take some of this burden off of you. And put on, you know, delegate different aspects. But I think you really got a grasp. I had no idea about your history. I had no idea about
that's
what's going on in Detroit.
Fascinating.
What? Fascinating. Fascinating.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, we're down to the last couple of minutes. Thank you, Brother Leroy. And thank you, Dr. Vision. You went there, you pulled it out, and Brother Leroy just delivered. Brother Leroy, for our listeners, if they want to learn more about what you're doing in Detroit or just if they want to respond, if they got some history that they want to be part of the project or anything, how should they get in contact with you?
Well, I have a website. It's propertyrehabcentral.com, and that's where I actually – promote my business, which is helping real estate investors locate here and find properties, renovate, you know, and depending on what their strategy is for their property, whether they want to create rentals, whether they want to live in the property, or they just want to flip. We help with investors, and my site, my website is the best place. I'm also on Facebook, so I have a there's a Return to Mecca page. And, you know, we can contact one another through there. So those would be the best two ways of contact. And, you know, I'm always looking for people, you know, that have the similar passion. So, you know, I look forward to any contact from anybody that, you know, I read one of the things Dr. Ridgely said recently on Facebook where he said, if you're talking and you're a believer, and you know, but you're not ready to separate, you know, we really don't have a lot to talk about. I think it was something along the lines. So I like to talk to other people that want to separate. And so if you want to separate, I'm here. I'm your brother, and I'll help in any way I can.
So Return
we appreciate
to
it here
Facebook,
at the time.
Return to Becca, your Facebook and your website again, brother?
PropertyRehabCentral.com.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Carlton.
Thank you, Brother Leroy, very, very much for an inspiring show. And you're always welcome on our show. And we look forward to hearing from you again. And we'll see you out there on Facebook.
Yes, sir. All praise due to Allah. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
Won't you let me, won't you help me?